This is our we're got our first cold open again in a couple weeks. We went like,
how'd you feel about the shorter episodes?
Editing wise, they were a lot easier. Like, even just mentally, like, I could be like, I only have 30 minutes to edit instead of an hour. Mm-hmm. So, like, the initial sitting down was a lot like, oh, I can knock this out in a little while. Still took me a couple days because, you know, I was exhausted when I got back from PAX. But, yeah.
I found them easier as well to kind of do or to digest them. Mm-hmm. Like, I haven't gotten to them officially, but, like, 30 to 40 minutes, it's like, oh, this isn't so bad.
Yeah, I might, I'm going to play around with formatting. There's also something I meant to talk with you about off the air. Yeah, there's some sausage I want to go into. So I'm actually not going to go into it on the show this time.
That means it's real sausage. Oh, snap.
Yeah, like, this is the secret sausage. The secret sausage.
That was horrible in so many ways. I couldn't even comprehend the first part of how bad, and then you double punned it. Okay.
The double punned it. It's like, I'm not even going to go into that. I can't make a pun out of pundit. So.
But so, cold open?
I mean, that's what this is. This,
was that enough, riffing. Or should we really try to do a cold open?
No, unless you've got something, you like saw someone naked on the side of the street and have a funny story or something.
No.
No, nope, no nope. Voodoo, no,
I mean, dogs peeing in the rain. Like, voodoo fight clubs sort of shenanigans all day in and out kind of thing. Like,
Your life isn't that interesting, is what you're saying? No,
it's just a normal corporate job.
All right. Well, in that case, let's get to the show.
It's a gamer. Da-da. We're here. It's a gamer. Da-da. That's it.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Make Me a Gamer, the procedurally generated podcast that's a roguelike for your ears. I'm your host, T-Man, the man with the T-Plan, and I'm here with...
Harvey Z, in the place to be.
Just trying that out. It came into my head today for some reason, and I don't know if I like it. I don't think so.
Let's repeat it again for the people who...
I'm T-Man, the man with the T-Plan.
Let's keep workshopping it.
The man all with right, the T-plan. I've got one feedback.
T-plan. You just added a T to plan.
I mean, what did you make? You Harvey Z in the place to be? Like, that doesn't even make grammatical sense.
I'm here. I'm in the place. This is the place to be. Like, it made complete... It is T-plan. Like, if it stood for something, okay, fair enough. T-plan.
Well, like, fine. So I guess we're not going to do that. I tried. I'm putting myself out there for you, the listener, and making a fool out of myself.
Harvey Z with the Z plan? Like,
but it T-man and T-plan. Like, it goes together. And like, Harvey Z and, like, Carvey Z, maybe.
All right, let's... I'm still, like... I'm waiting for the T-plan. Like, what's the T-plan? Like... Because it almost feels like you're ready to set it up for a pun. Like, it's going to become a bit. It's the T-plan bit, but where?
I don't really have anywhere else to go with that. It's just part of the intro. I wanted something fun with, like, Harvey Z. And
I mean, guess I it did doesn't rhyme work. It, but so you went with the man with the plan. Go that extra mile. Just put a T.
Should I just say I'm the T-man with the T-plan? Like... Would that make better?
It's the T-plan that I'm having issues with. It's not the other words. Everything else was, like, lost on me once you said the word T-plan. That's all I focused on. What's a T-plan?
I haven't got that far yet.
That's the part we either need to workshop or trash this whole thing. Or T-rash.
This was not the sausage, by the way. This was just...
No, this is not even the fennel on top of the sausage.
This isn't even the bun that wraps the sausage.
T-dog. Do you say...
No. Okay. We're not going to go there. That doesn't even rhyme. Anyway, hi. As you can tell, we are not structured this episode. This is more of the Make Me a Gamer you may have come to love, where we just talk about random shit for an hour. Please let us know, by the way, your feedback on the last two episodes compared to, like, our usual format. Like, did you like the fact that we were specifically focused on one topic? Did it stimulate your brain more because we were like on a track, sort of, so to speak? Or is this more what you want? Like
the crumbly sausage that we leave on.
Yeah. Like, do you like the tea plan nonsense?
Or just more Harvey Z. 50% more Harvey Z.
50. Oh, God. I don't even want 25% more Harvey Z. So this is probably going to be the last Harvey Z snaps of the year.
Oh.
Because, so we're recording this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Then the next episode we record is probably going to be our Game of the Year episode.
Yeah. Manatees.
The Manatees, yeah.
Yes.
And then we might have something small before the end of the year, but like, our next recording session is going to be our last recording session of the year because I'm gone all the week of Christmas.
Good to know. Yeah. I'm here working and was hoping to hang out. Guess not.
No, I'm gone that entire week. So
Christmas is canceled.
Like the last year, the Manatees episode was like a 40, 45 minute episode.
Mm-hmm.
So if we aim for like a similar-ish time, I'm hoping to edit it as my plane is out Sunday evening.
Okay.
So I'm hoping to be able to edit it and have it in the work so that it'll come out Christmas week and there will be a podcast that week, even though I'm not here. But then there's the couple leftover days that, like, I think the last day of December is a Tuesday. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if we'll do like two shorter episodes, like in the same recording session or what. This is more sausage. You
way
don't need
more
to hear.
Sausage,
but anyway, so you'll have this episode, and then next week you'll have the Manatees for sure. I don't know. We may take a week off. It'll depend on how our recording schedule goes.
Like split up the Manatees into two episodes or something.
Maybe. I don't know. I'll play it by ear. We'll see how it goes. You'll probably know more by the end of the Manatees episode when that comes out. So this, as I said, this is probably the last Harvey Z snaps of the year. So I figure because we're going into a new year, so
new decade even.
Yeah, new decade. So we figure this will be the last snap of this universe.
Okay.
Like, so like we can go big with it because this could have like huge ramifications. Okay. And then like start over, so with that fresh universe where we're back to square one, because I think in this one, what did you get rid of in this one? You got rid of like light bulbs.
God, yeah, it's been a while, but like I got rid of some stuff where it actually started to affect me.
Yeah, I think you got rid of televisions. Didn't you get rid of?
See, this is a problem. Because
you kept movie theaters, got rid of televisions,
DVD collections and stuff like that.
Yeah, you kept air conditioning over light bulbs.
Was this the mustard season?
No, mustard season was the first one.
Okay.
Yeah. So if someone at home has been keeping track, you can kind of stack. I'd be interested to see like what dystopias we've created as the snaps continue. But yeah, this will be the last one. And then we're going to start fresh in 2020 with a brand new snap world, so to speak. And I also try to not snap the same things,
mm-hmm.
you know, like vary it up. So starting in a new world gives me... I won't give you the same thing twice, but I might use like XCOM versus something else as opposed to like XCOM and Toe Jam and Earl,
like,
or
create new dystopian futures.
Yeah. Anyway, so this one is like one of the broadest ones I've ever done, and I'm really interested to see what you go with because I know what you like. But I also know that the other thing against it is also important.
Okay.
So here we go. On the one hand, sweet foods.
One of my favorite taste flavors.
Yeah.
Profiles. Sweetness in general. Okay.
On the other hand, savory foods.
You could have gone tricky with this, but, well, nope. Now my brain's going. Because sweet foods, are we saying like sugars in general or... Because not just desserts, but any dish that has sweetness?
Yeah. Sweet food versus savory food. So
am I just deleting anything like a taste?
Yeah, pretty much. Like, you're deleting, like, steaks, savory, you know.
So we're not just going to have, like, steaks, but your tongue can't register it as savory, and it's like a dessert steak. Like, am I killing taste buds, or am I killing recipes?
Let's go with taste buds, because I think that makes it more interesting. So
billions
of
taste buds.
Yeah, so like everyone in the world will either not be able to taste sweet things anymore or will not be able to taste savory things anymore.
Ooh, because that does change. But so like diabetics can still get diabetes. Sugar exists. They just won't know that it's super rich and sweet.
Yes.
Ooh, moral responsibilities there. Because otherwise it's like, oh, if I destroy all sugars, do I effectively like destroy diabetes in a way? No. Well, savory foods, it's like all the meat, umami flavors, basically.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't pick my second favorite of the taste bud foods, though.
Which is?
Spicy.
Spicy, yeah.
Sweet and spicy is my favorite.
Like, sweet versus savory is the main classifications.
Yeah. They seem more opposite.
Like, right. They're like the main two, so I figured, like, one or the other kind of. I know you like spicy, but I felt like putting sweet versus spicy would be.
Yeah, although it's harder for me then, because for me, I'm like, would I prefer to eat sweet things or would I prefer to eat savory things? But killing taste buds, would I want to eat like unsavory chicken and unsavory like bacon? It becomes a, what are we doing here? Like, am I relegating myself to like a yuck meat world? But a sweet, but to get rid of desserts and all the delicious.
Like, how is your Soylent, by the way? I don't know if we ever went over that on the podcast.
I've abandoned it after a week. I went through, I managed to go through a full week of Soylent.
And then just no more.
I mean, I have packets of Soylent. I'm like, oh, at some point I'll no. It's so it was boring. It was honestly just.
I just think you could taste that. Every time.
That's true. Savory. That is, I would create a Soylent world of, because I could make it a little sweeter, but if I destroyed savory. But yet, I really want sweetness. So I'm like trying to convince my brain we need to get rid of the savory. And my brain is just like, no, this is bad. You like bacon. You like meat. You like those like delicious flavors. But I'm putting it up against sweetness. Like Jimmy Eat World. I think for the good, no, we're going diabetes world. We destroy all savory. We live in a Willy Wonka sweetness world.
That's what I thought you would do.
It seems like such a bad idea, though. Like,
I mean, you've already gotten rid of light bulbs.
So we're all in the dark, sucking on our pixie sticks.
Yeah, and watching movies.
But not blue. Yeah. Yeah, all right. All sweetness, right. I think, is the better option here.
Okay.
Is it? Oh, God. It's one of those things where always afterwards that regret of, I've done something bad, but my brain doesn't know what. And at some point I'll realize, oh, God, what have I done?
It's like the government.
Ooh.
Did I go there? I think
too
I
real,
went there.
Too real.
All right. We're not here to talk about that. We're here to talk about games. And be happy and have uplifting and fun conversations.
Yes, this is the sweet podcast.
not the savory podcast.
Not the bitter
podcast. God. There you go. So I'm back from PAX Unplugged. There were literally no video games there. PAX Unplugged is just board games and like tabletop RPGs, Dungeons and Dragons, that sort of thing. We could talk about that if you want.
Like, I mean, I like it, but I don't know what really happened. So I only know PAX Unplugged from like the D&D stuff.
Right. So I went with my girlfriend. There's an exhibit hall expo similar to regular PAX, except it's all just board game vendors, tabletop RPG vendors, dice, lots of dice.
Mm-hmm.
I bought some dice. I bought a nice little case.
Wormwood?
Yeah, I got it. Elderwood Academy.
Oh, Elderwood Academy.
It's a nice little like octopus Cthulhu-esque, probably an Illithid, maybe if it's D&D based. Yeah. Here.
Oh, he went with the Halloween colored.
They're black with like I can't remember what the coal. It might have been copper or gold or I'm not sure exactly what they called it.
But, so I'm feeling your dice. They've got a good heft to them. What are they made of?
I think they're not metal, but like they weren't straight metal, or they might be metal. I can't remember exactly.
Is it magnetic?
The lid on the dice container is.
Because it feels. No,
it's... like the dice aren't and won't.
Man, roll it, or is
yeah,
that?
No, go ahead.
I can roll your dice. This feels weirder than the sausage phrasing, but at the same time,
he's playing with my dice right now. He's got them in his hand.
We don't need a play-by-play, but it's got a good roll and a good heft to it.
Yeah, so like they had some really cool ones that were like gold and like shiny red, and like the colors looked really nice together, but it was so hard to read. Like, and they shined, and so light reflected off them. And so utility-wise, it wasn't very useful.
And I'm looking at it, and I do like the color scheme, actually. Like, there's nothing wrong with orange on black.
Yeah, yeah. It looks... I like this. It pops out. They feel good to roll, more so than regular plastic dice. I don't play a lot of D&D.
That's what I'm, like, curious.
But at the same time, like, I've started following a lot of tabletop RPG people on Twitter, and I've started getting the bug. I don't know if I talked about it on the podcast or not, but I have an idea for, like, my own custom campaign.
Okay. Well, I know you've mentioned this to me, like, I don't know. Yeah, you're right, on the podcast or not, but you haven't told me what it is, which I'm glad. I'd like to play in it.
Oh, yeah. I was sort of inspired by Sneak Attack, which is a podcast, the main D&D podcast I listen to. The first season, they ran a straightforward, I think it was 5th edition D&D campaign.
Yep.
Then they took like half a year off, mm-hmm. I think, somewhere in there. And then for season 2 or volume 2, I don't remember what they called it.
Volume 2, I think is the... Yeah, I think it's volume 2.
The DM created a custom space campaign, mm-hmm. like using the D&D 5 rule set as like a base, but he added and modified. I think they may eventually do a Kickstarter with like the rule book and that sort of thing.
He seems to imply that like you can join his Patreon and stuff and get access to his notes, and he puts out extra like lore and stuff like that. Like,
right.
He's trying to build something.
Yeah. Like so, and it's really cool. And so he kind of inspired me, and I've got like this idea for my own space campaign. And what I haven't taken the time to do is like sit down and figure out what's base I want to use. Like, do I want to use 5th edition? Do I want to use something like Fate? Do I want to use GURPS?
Okay, I know GURPS from a long time ago. Haven't really played it. Other than, there was one game I played with GURPS. I prefer D&D only because it's more well-known and such.
Mm-hmm.
The Fate system, is that the McElroys have used a different one as well, and it's more narrative-based.
Yeah, Fate is more narrative-based. It's like pluses. I think it's like pluses and minuses.
Yeah.
And like, if you get several pluses, you're like, you do very strongly, and it's just like more narrative than like my 20 beats your 18 sort of thing.
Less percentage based and more major success, mild success, mixed success kind of thing like that.
Yeah. I feel like one of my 2020 goals is going to be like get more involved in tabletop RPG, either in like the community or like start my own game or just do something with that, because I've like started following people, and so this is a little weird like personal story that I wasn't expecting to tell on a podcast, but whatever. Like, I'm a writer, and a lot of my biggest issue with D&D and tabletop RPGs was I like creating characters, but I always felt guilty. Not so much guilty, but like, I felt like it was a personal waste of time for me to be creating a character and participating in a narrative when I could be working on like my novel idea, you know, like it doesn't make any sense. Yeah, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
Like, I understand this was like a stupid comparison to make, but like it was a very sort of, if I can't create a strong narrative and like a character and everything, like I have all these ideas to make like novels, and that's what I want to do with my life, but if I spend every week 4 hours planning a campaign or like participating in that, I could be doing that for novels. And what I've come to realize is that it's okay to do that. Like, it's fun. This is like a side thing you can do, and some people turn it into like streams and podcasts and that other sort of stuff. And I don't know. I feel like the walls are breaking down sort of for me in terms of like
what you have to be a writer.
Yeah. Yeah. Like, I can do multiple things. And like the weirdest thing about it is this campaign idea that I've had has actually inspired me, and I've started writing like a novel in the universe as like a setup story, like sort of to help me like flesh out the universe and figure out all the details needed for like backstory for a campaign. Mm-hmm. And so all that stuff is intertangled, and like I can be creative in multiple ways and use it. And yeah. Anyway, the point is, I want to do more of that stuff in coming in the next year, and I'm going to try and expand a little beyond just video games and do like more tabletop stuff and getting a nice dice set and like this nice container and everything. It looked really cool, and you know, I was there. Why not?
Yeah. I support this wholeheartedly as someone who was super into that idea and wanting to get you guys to, was one of my get rich quick schemes, is like, we should do a D&D podcast. Like, yeah, I'm pro this. I'll play if you come up with campaigns. I have some stupid one-shot campaign ideas, usually based on like weird dreams I've had.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, if you want to do some stuff, because I do think I'm the same way, except I never really wanted to be a professional writer, but for mm-hmm. fun, I would write stories in my head, like just creative stuff. And it's D&D was one of those things where I was like, oh, this seems like a natural way to create a fantasy world, and I'll just create characters. And so I would create characters that would inhabit this world and what would happen to them and so forth. But I never played with them in an actual D&D campaign, but I used it as a way to flesh out like, this is this person's abilities, and as they grow in my tale, like when they'll have like these different things that they'll overcome and such, this is where I would create a magic system this way and so forth. And this is how, like, I didn't keep it locked into the rules of D&D, but I used it as a way to kind of a fountain of creativity.
Yeah, I get that.
Yeah,
cool. And yeah, I got a bunch of board games too. Yeah, I won't go into those because explaining board games over a podcast is a little weirder. But they're fun. If you're looking for a cool board game, I recommend Irish Gauge. You're planning out train routes and you bid on the line and get like shares of a line. And then you basically, when certain lines come up, you get paid. And the goal is to have as much money at the mm-hmm. end. And so there's a lot of strategy in like placing trains. And because you can only place trains when you have shares in that train.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. It's a very dynamic game in a way I wasn't expecting. Anyway, and that's all I'll talk about the board games. Let's do a little news, I think.
Alrighty.
The rest of PAX Unplugged was just, we did panels, we walked around Philly a little bit.
Did you ever go to the main stage games?
We did not get into Acquisitions, Inc. Like, my girlfriend is not huge into tabletop stuff, so we were mostly trying to focus on board game-related things.
Fair enough, yeah.
Yeah. There was one panel that was really helpful. I'm also designing my own board game at the time, or currently. And so there was like a panel I went to about how to like market and design your own board game that had a lot of good tips. So that was my PAX Unplugged, my plug for Unplugged. Yeah. So there's been some off and on news. The big news is happening shortly after our recording session is over with. The Game Awards are tonight. So, like, the game of the year and all that stuff is happening, like, probably about 30 minutes after we finish wrapping up this podcast. So we don't have any of that information. I'm sure everyone's going to be talking about that. What I do have is some random games and random announcements. The first one, I wasn't sure about whether or not I wanted to bring this up because I haven't actually... I didn't watch the trailer for it. I just mostly saw funny people like making fun of it. There's a game coming out on Steam next year called I Am Jesus Christ.
Nice.
And it's like a trailer and you play as Jesus from a first person perspective, it looks like.
Is it a first person shooter?
So the key features In the Steam listing, open world, special skills, realistic fight with Satan, over 30 miracles, like healing people, walking on water, calming storms, and feeding people.
And this is not a parody.
Fuck if I know. Like I said, I haven't watched the actual trailer because I don't really care. Mm-hmm. Like, I feel like maybe I should have watched it since I was planning on talking about it. But, like, I don't know. It says that the crucifixion and resurrection are going to be a part of the game. Like, there's, like, laying on of hands and I don't know. It's gotten a lot of...
Is it taking itself seriously, or is it kind of tongue-in-cheek, all of the, like, adverts?
It looks like it's taking itself a little seriously. Like, it's a first-person game. It's not a shooter.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I also don't think it's, like, supposed to be, like, educational and, like, that mm-hmm. this is it. I don't think this is, like, a Christian game where,
that's what,
like,
I was wondering, yeah.
Like, you know, the church made a game, or, like...
Like the Left Behind book series.
Or right, movie right, series, yeah. Is it, like, I don't think this is that. It looks like it's just somebody wanted to make a game where you're Jesus. And, like, you perform miracles and stuff like that. And it's supposed to be out next year on Steam. And obviously a lot of people are having a field day with it, from, like, churches being angry and everyone else making kind of fun of it. The best comment I saw was... something along the lines of, the base game is great, but it gets a lot harder in New Game Plus when you play as Judas and don't have as many respawns. Anyway, I don't know. That was, like, making the rounds while I was at PAX Unplugged. So, like, I saw it, but mm-hmm. I didn't really have the time to delve into, like, what the hell this is supposed to be. Like, the graphics are not great. It looks like a 2005 sort of, like... first person game with those sort of models. Like, it, I don't know, it's weird, it's fascinating. It says coming soon on its Steam page, so I don't have an official date.
Easter
for you.
Sunday.
This Easter, Jesus rises again.
And I don't have, unfortunately, a lot of faith-based puns, and I'm not gonna go there, and we're not gonna do sexual innuendo with Jesus.
Yeah, we're not gonna do sexual innuendo. No, that I draw the line at that. I'd be okay with something like, this game will be a revelation.
Ah,
you know,
that's a good call. Yeah.
I don't know enough of, like, the, I almost said lower tier Bible
nice.
Chapters. Oh, like, you know,
the,
like,
early game stuff, you know, the tutorial books.
Yeah. Like, I, you know about, like, Matthew and Luke and John, but I don't know about, like, the Corinthians or Philip, the, What is it? Philippians or something?
I'm not the person.
Psalms. Yeah. Like, I don't, I'm not a big, I don't want to say I'm not a big religious person. I'm just not a big, I never biblical. Like read the religious text, so to speak. Like, I know a lot of the stories,
mm-hmm.
you know, between Abraham and Job and, you know, the walking on water. And
you've read Lamb, though, right?
Yes, I have. Okay. Read Lamb. That's a very good book by Christopher Moore.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, it's doesn't look like it's like that kind of tongue-in-cheek. But okay. It also it's not like also the other way where it's supposed to be like an educational game either. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's, I don't really know who it's for. We'll find out, I guess, when it's released, if it's released. If people put up enough of a fuss, it might not ever come out.
I'll hold my tongue. We'll wait and see. This is a game to watch.
Yeah. Yeah. Games to watch for 2020. I am Jesus Christ. So another big announcement that happened, it doesn't really affect me, but it was like a big deal in terms of what could be happening for the next generation. Starting with MLB The Show 2021, Sony will be producing the game for multiple platforms, not just Sony platforms.
Oh, okay.
So, like, for the last, I don't know however long it was, it's like at least 5 years or so, Sony has had exclusive rights to MLB games, kind of like the same way EA does Madden games.
Mm-hmm.
So MLB The Show is the big baseball game that comes out every year. And up until this point, it's been exclusive to Sony. And so apparently they redid a deal with the MLB this past week. and they've got a multi-year extension, but there will be, for the first time ever, a historic expansion will come to additional console platforms beyond PlayStation and as early as 2021. So this is a big deal because it's an exclusive to Sony that could only be on PlayStation, but now Sony is also making games for, could make games for like Xbox or Nintendo and that sort of thing. Maybe it's just coming to PC. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But the walls breaking down on exclusives is kind of a big deal.
Are there other systems that have, I mean, Microsoft still has its exclusive stuff, I'm sure.
Right, right.
Like Nintendo has its property, but like, so it doesn't really help the system because Sony makes the PlayStation.
Right.
But it's a game company as well.
Yeah, it's Sony San Diego, I believe, is the studio that is making this particular. Mm-hmm. So it's still Sony produced and they'll still make money off the game. But before it was like an additional reason to get a PlayStation mm-hmm. is this is the only place you can get it. And that is sort of breaking down. And it's the idea of cross-play and like more things on more platforms and being able to play with whoever you want has become a lot more important to game consumers, especially with Minecraft and Fortnite and these games where like kids want to play with their friends, but if one has an Xbox and one has a Switch, it's harder for them to do it. But now like negotiations are happening and things are breaking down where like before it was like you had to play on Switch with another Switch person. Now it's like you can play Minecraft with Xbox people and you can play Fortnite with a PlayStation person.
How very Generation Z.
Yeah. It's weird that we grew up as the console war generation.
War.
And like that continues on in like internet discussions. Like I don't think people in their like 20s and 30s never quite got over like Nintendo versus Sega or like Nintendo versus Sony or Microsoft versus Sony or whatever. Like the because of the exclusives, because of competition, everyone's like, "Ah, my system is the one to beat," because when you're a kid, you don't get mm-hmm. both. You get one or the other, and then you fight for what you get. I think we've talked about this before.
Yeah.
And the new generation where like everything's kind of interconnected, I'm wondering if that sort of console war will fade into the background as other gamers mature and like could like look at our generation as like kind of like proto boomerish in our views on like how games should be exclusive and whatnot.
Because I do feel like it's bigger than just video games in a like Apple versus Microsoft or Droid versus iPhones kind of thing. Like even now there is a sense of like my stuff is better because I like my stuff kind of thing.
And right.
Your stuff is trash.
Yeah.
There is this, but I don't know if that's, yeah, it's a cool phenomenon to see this like interconnectedness.
Yeah.
I don't know where it came from or what was the first kind of really breakaway thing for it, but
I mean, I'm pretty sure like Minecraft and was one of the first ones that like really led to crossplay because everyone was playing Minecraft and people wanted to like be on servers together. Excuse me. Anyway, yeah, like I haven't played a baseball game in like 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So this isn't like big news for me personally, but it's just the idea, you know, of it spreading out and it possibly going to other games. Personal news for me that came out this week was that 2K announced their new studio called Cloud Chamber, who is developing a new BioShock. It's still a couple years out, but they announced it and were like, yes, we're making this. The next BioShock is going to come out and this is the studio that's making it. There's going to be a office studio in San Francisco and one in Montreal. And both of those teams are going to be working on making this game. We don't know any more details other than that. It's just a new BioShock.
Is it the third or fourth BioShock or?
So it would be the fourth BioShock because there's BioShock, BioShock 2, and BioShock Infinite right now.
Mm-hmm.
People are arguing because they always argue. It's the internet. What else do you do besides argue on the internet? They argue in whether it'll be labeled as BioShock 3 or BioShock 4. Like, was BioShock Infinite a spinoff and didn't count as BioShock 3?
All
like,
right.
You know, it's the semantic arguing yeah. that a lot of people like to do. Some people are arguing whether, obviously not going to number it because Bioshock Infinite wasn't numbered. They'll come up with a different subtitle.
Infinity plus one.
Yeah. Whatever it is, I'm excited for another Bioshock. Like, Bioshock Infinite is one of my favorite games of all time. The first Bioshock is a great game. Bioshock 2 was a good game. It gets a lot of flack, but it did a lot of good things. Mm-hmm. Like, the first Bioshock has a weird... Like, it's slightly archaic when you go back to it, because both Bioshock 2 and Bioshock Infinite make it so, like, your left hand is your abilities and your right hand holds the gun sort of thing. And in the Bioshock, the first Bioshock, some people tend to forget this based on the updates, but like the first Bioshock, you had to do one or the other. Like you weren't activating powers and shooting at the same time. Like if you were using your electricity, that was what you used. And then you had to switch to your gun. And so you couldn't be using, you would like use your electricity to set off a trap, then switch to a gun, fire, then switch to like fire to activate another trap or so on and so forth. And like the system is a little clunkier now based on improvements from the later games. So I'm interested to see what this does, because the director, Ken Levine, he's on a new studio making something new. So this is like a completely new vision of Bioshock. It'll be someone's and else's interpretation. And I'm interested to see what that's going to turn out to be.
Cool. More stuff to look out for. Well, yeah. You said not for years.
I would say earliest we'll see it is 2021, but it's probably even more likely 2022.
Okay.
Based on how they announced it. And like there was like some insider thing, like they've been working on this since 2017, but it also may have been rebooted this year. And so it's unclear how far along they are, but the announcement itself made it sound like it's not like, don't expect it like as a like a launch title for the PS5 or something like that. There's one more thing I wanted to go over, but it's not that important. I was just going to talk about some Overwatch League movement. A couple players retired. One was like a real good DPS who didn't play much this past season. Pine, he was for the NYXL. He retired and is just retiring. Then Jake, a player for the Houston Outlaws, also retired. And Custa, a player for the LA Valiant, retired. And they are moving to like the other side of the desk. They're like turning into like the Troy Aikmans and Tony Romos of Overwatch. Okay. Like Jake is going to be a caster next year, and Custa is going to be on the desk as an analyst. So it's interesting to see like the esports is kind of
how old are they?
I think Custa is 26.
Okay,
so and like Jake is like 24. I want to say. So, like, they're old for esports.
Yeah.
But, like, they're not old. And, like, esports is also a very quick turnaround. Like, they played two seasons and now they're moving on. So, It'll be interesting to see if this continues, especially since a lot of people are expecting burnout because there's going to be a lot of traveling this next Overwatch League season. But yeah, that's all that was a real quick one. That's not super, we don't have to go super in depth on that. Hat time, Cauldron of Power, make me a gamer minute. We'll have a name for this someday. The Nameless section. There's a bunch of games in there. I have no idea what they are at this point. Harvey Z is going to play his own game where if he recognizes the game or the system that it's from. If he doesn't, I'm going to tell him all about it.
So as prior before, I've always been 0 for 0 on the system as well as even like what the game is about. I think I might know this one.
Mm-hmm.
I can give you my guess, but I'll tell you. The name of the game is Splosion Man.
Uh-huh.
Now, Splosion Man, is this like some Japanese title for like a Bomberman game?
No.
So close, yet so far.
I mean, I would say you're not close at all.
So it's not a pixelated game about dropping bombs and like blowing up?
No, not really.
Enemies? Okay. Splosion Man. What's it about?
So, Splosion Man was a game on the Xbox 360.
Okay.
It was a downloadable game. I can't remember the studio that made it. I'll look that up in a second. It's a side-scroller sort of platformer puzzle game. And I don't remember if it was two or three explosions that you have, but basically, I think it was three. You're basically you play Explosion Man, mm-hmm. and he can make himself explode. And when he explodes, he shoots up into the air. You can't jump. You can't. All you basically do is run and explode. And so there's like puzzles you have to do with this mechanic where you have to basically platform your way around. And like each explosion is weaker. So like the first explosion sends you the highest. The second one sends you a little bit higher, but not the same amount. The third one sends you very little. So you have to like plan how you're jumping, and like it's not enemy based. There are like enemies, but they like just, I'm pretty sure if I remember correctly, they kill you in one hit. Like they're like things to avoid, or like you explode on them to like refresh your energy or something. You might like, I think there were like tanks or something. Like if you exploded on them in the middle of like a jump, you could reset and like have like another big explosion to send you further. There was like these sorts of mechanics in the game, and it's a 2D side scroller platformer, like I said, and it was very fun. It was like a different way of platforming for me.
Was it fun?
Yeah.
Like it seems like you're not selling me on the, because I know each of these games had like something that really hooked you or was interesting. Or
I mean, I finished all the levels on it. Like it was a cool game at the time. They later came out with Mrs. Explosion Man.
Nice. It feels like a poop game.
I think if it came out now, it would probably be a poop game.
Okay.
Like, this was, like, an indie game, one of the first ones on, like, the Xbox Live Arcade back in the days of the 360. In fact, I think they might have ported Mrs. Explosion Man to, like, phones and stuff. Let me look this up.
Because it does seem like an interesting game, but one that you would play on your phone or so just for a few minutes at a time.
Yeah, okay, so the developer is Twisted Pixel. Oh. I remember this. They bought... Microsoft bought them after Explosion Man, like because it did so well. And Mrs. Explosion Man was released on 360, Windows, and Windows Phone.
Okay.
Oh, iOS as well. And apparently came out on the Switch last November. So if you are interested in playing Mrs. Explosion Man, you can get that on the Switch. Yeah, I mean, it's basically what I said. You can use your explosions to kill enemies if they get in your way. The enemies kill you. You have
to
get
from one side of the map or to the other. You
get to the exit, basically. Yeah. Like I'm pretty sure the loose plot of the game is like scientists had captured you and then you exploded your way out. And now you're just trying to escape the lab. And like each level is just the scientists trying to recapture you and you causing havoc because you explode.
Well, I'm glad there's a narrative arc to this besides just solve the puzzle.
Listen, if you've seen any Michael Bay movie, you know explosions make the best narrative.
Lens flare.
No, that's J.J. Abrams.
Is it?
Yeah.
Wait, they're
two Abrams different... is lens flare. Although, I mean, Michael Bay uses lens flare too, but J.J. Abrams is the one that everyone talks about the lens flare for.
Okay.
Because that was Star Trek and like lens flare everywhere.
I'm thinking of Transformers with its lens flares.
I think he used lens flare. Like I said, Michael Bay did not use lens flare, but he's more known for like the bombastic explosions and like plots that just allow more things to be destroyed and that sort of thing.
Boom.
Boom. Yeah. Boom. Boom, knowledge dropped. Anyway, Explosion Man. That's, again, game I enjoyed when it was around.
I keep thinking these are a lot older, but it seems like a lot of these games are like Microsoft 360 games or Xbox.
Yeah, there were quite a few that like I remember from my... Because like 360, I played a lot of games on it, and then I kind of... When I moved to the PS4... I didn't have that library anymore and I wasn't playing it as much. So I kind of like forgot about a lot of them. And so I was browsing through like my library and like, oh yeah, I remember that game. Oh yeah, I remember that. And that's how I got a couple of those in there. Just like,
these are don't associate you as like a 360 guy.
Yeah. I mean, I was for the 360 generation. Like yeah. I had a 360 and a PS3 and a Wii. Like that, I think that was the only generation I bought every possible console you could buy. I think I even had the DS. I think that was the handheld for that generation. Yeah, that one was my, I think, when I went full gamer mode. Because PlayStation. I had PlayStation and N64, but I didn't have the Dreamcast or any Sega things for that matter. PlayStation 2, I just had the PlayStation 2. I didn't get a GameCube. I didn't get an original Xbox. Mm-hmm. Then PlayStation 3, I originally got the PlayStation 3. Then I also got the Wii. Then I also got the 360. That one was, and then I think I primarily stayed on the 360 for that generation and just got like exclusives for the others. And then this generation, obviously, I got the PS4, but I didn't get the Xbox One. And I got a Wii U, which I regret. Anyway.
Ooh.
Yeah, no, Wii U is probably the stupidest gaming purchase I made, I would say. Like, outside of, like, individual games that were bad, like, the Wii U, everything that I played on the Wii U that I enjoyed is now on Switch. There is no reason for me to have had the Wii U. Like, if I just had patience instead of needing to play everything right away, mm-hmm. I would have been fine. So that's my lesson from the Wii U is I'm trying. I haven't quite got it yet. I'm working on it. I'm doing better. Patience is a virtue, especially in gaming, because you can get things for cheaper. And that system you think is really important now may not be that important after all. PSA, you know,
life lessons in gaming.
Yeah, life lessons. This is T-Man's
T-plan.
No, it's not a plan. I don't know.
T-plans for life.
Yeah, T-Man's T-plans for life. There you go. All right. we got it. We got there.
We saved it. Yeah, salvaged.
It took 3/4 of an episode, but we found where I was going with it. Okay, so we've played some games. Do you want to talk about Children of Morta?
Children of Morta, yeah. I've told you bits and pieces of it,
mm-hmm.
but so this was a game that I pre-ordered from Amazon, not knowing what it was, and just simply based on, I guess, like
the and title you'll page. Continue playing it forever just because this is the game that doesn't end. Yes, it goes on and on, my friend. Some people started buying it, not knowing. Okay, anyway.
Okay, it's like at some point, you need to end that.
But it doesn't end. That's the whole point.
Next episode, it'll continue. That'll be the running gag. So it's a pixelated game. It's extremely beautiful. And all I knew was the narrative story of it sounded really cool, which was you play as a family, like a clan of family members on a mountain that is being plagued by a great evil. And like you can play as various family members who each have their own like way to play. As I was playing it for the first time, I could only play originally as like the first character, which was the father. I was like, oh, this is a fun game. Okay, but this is different from every other game I play because it's not a turn-based strategy game. This is actually in real time. I have to have reflexes. I have to attack and dodge and move around and such. And I was like, okay, this is fine. About 2-3 like storylines, or I think I just beat the tutorial originally when I started to realize, am I in a roguelike? Because immediately on, you get two characters then. You suddenly get the father, and then you get the daughter. And the daughter is a long-range archer. The father is like a shield and sword guy. And the thing is, I love it. It's a beautiful game. It's really narrative heavy. So, like, every time you complete a mission, more story or lore comes up. Gotcha. Like, all the family members are in the house, so you can interact with them or talk to them. And, like one or two lines. It's not a huge narrative thing. And I don't know, that because I've only played it the first time, like, is this automated or is it generated? Like, is it something that's always going to come up, or is it you beat the level, this is the story that you're going to get? Because what happened was I died, and when I died I felt really bad, but then the plot continued and I was like, oh, I just have to replay the level.
Did you play as the same character after you died?
I decided to play as the same character because I had the father and the daughter, and I was like, the father is more, I'm familiar with it now.
But you had, it, once you died, you had the option of still switch. Playing as the dad?
I could switch to the other person. And the characters I started to realize where I was like, oh, I earn coin and I can upgrade all my characters, or I can upgrade, each of them have abilities.
Oh, interesting.
So, and it's a complex like ability tree of like maybe each person has like 12 to 15 skills.
Oh, that's
including like, this is why I like it. There's lineage skills, or like, so if you, there's level 1, 2, and 3 tiers, but if you get like 4, lack of a better, points to ability points in levels that you've invested in level 1, you earn the level one family tier, which is to say this character then gives all family members a certain benefit.
Nice.
And so, like, the daughter is a speed-based character, so if you get her level ability, the first one is always a general, like, boost to ability, so it's a, every character becomes slightly faster. The second level one, which I haven't got to, is like, oh, when your other character is in a certain situation, this character may pop up to rescue them or such. And then the third is, like, she will imbue your attack with her own, like, ability attacks. So when you use your special move, it may contain her special move. But in order to do so, you would have to max out her skill tree. So that sort of a thing where I was like, oh, there's some, again, narrative of, like, the family member, as they get stronger, will help the other family members.
Nice.
And the, each character is unique that I've gotten, like, four or five characters at this point. But it was a, oh, no, I failed the mission. I guess I have to try it again. And then suddenly I was like, in a new map, new enemies, everything was randomly generated, it seemed like. And yet I had overlying objectives. Like, at some point, there's a sick dog, and it's like, find some mushrooms. But I died, and I was like, how will I find the mushrooms again? And it was like, in two, three missions, a mushroom popped up in that quest.
Huh.
But every time I die, lore pops up. Stuff happens. Like, the game doesn't stop.
So, it's not like when you die, you lose that character. It's not like a Darkest Dungeon type thing where it's like
they describe it as like this is a guardian family. They have like a crystal element. So like they die, but the goddess or whoever the spirit is will pull them up and put them back into the family house, which is a protective house.
Like, so when I when you first described this game to me, that I thought it was going to be like, okay, they've given you the family. You get to choose who you're playing with. But if they die, that's it.
That's what I thought. Permadeath. Okay.
But it's not like that. It's like a roguelike where you can choose which character you want to explore the dungeons with.
Yes.
And depending on what you like, you can level them up as you see fit.
So I could send, like, I have a level, the father is level 5, my newest guy is level 0, and he has no skills. But I could choose to send him in into this mission, and he's going to die, or he's going to level up at a pretty moderate speed. But now, because he's at level 0, but the guy's at level 5, he's automatically got some boost because the dad is looking out for him.
Got it. That's actually kind of a neat system. I kind of like that.
It's kind of cool, like, to play with it, and then, like, there's a drunk uncle who just makes you equipment and stuff, but it's really expensive, but you can upgrade it, and so then he upgrades all weapons and stuff, but it gets more stat-based, where it's like, oh, your damage will increase by, like, 1.2 points or something, and everybody's will increase in that way.
It's an interesting way to do, like, the roguelike type aspect of it. I do enjoy that the dying not only, like, it might reset your run, but it also gives you narrative hooks.
Because then you come back and then the family's like, oh, it's okay. What did you find out there? What did you see? And they give you a little bit of, like, lore. And that's why I'm like, it's never been repeated. Like, stuff keeps happening, which is also where I'm like, I felt really guilty when I set my level 0 guy in and he died after 60 seconds. And then yet the plot continued. And I was like, I don't want to waste guys to, like, just spam run. Like, I want to actually beat these missions and such.
Right.
Cool. Because I don't want the game to go past me. But I'm enjoying it. And it's amazingly cool for a pixelated world. Like, it's beautiful.
Oh, I may look into this when I'm not drowning in other games.
I guess if I brought my Switch game, you could play it on your system.
Oh yeah, yeah, like I can borrow that, like that still works the same way. Mm-hmm. So I may do that at some point just to test it out. But I also heard that you have not gotten back to Children of Morta in a bit because you started playing something else.
Yes, I of my second of my Black Friday purchases I've opened up, and that was Slay the Spire.
Yeah.
Slay the Spire.
The crowd goes wild.
But I was just... So I played it. There was, like, no narrative in the beginning.
Yes, that is true.
It basically...
I'm pretty sure I even told you that.
I knew, like, you had told me the stuff, and I was like, but after coming off of Children of Morta, where I was, like, so much narrative for a roguelike, I could see the stuff, and then I'm given a map, and it's like, choose a path to the top, beat the game. And I was like, all right. And I've got one character and I've got to unlock two others. I was thinking there'd be more. Again, I'm used to now. I'm going to have 7 family members.
A fourth character coming. There is going to be like DLC that adds another character.
Okay.
I don't know when it's coming, but I think it's in like beta early access testing on like PC right now. So
okay.
I'll keep you updated on that.
Because the there was like two mountains of like how I felt about Slay the Spire, where I was like, this is cool. Ah, this is crap.
There are two mountains inside of you.
Yes. They fight continuously. Which mountain wins? The one you've, I don't know. So like the, because there was parts I liked and then I disliked the game. Then I liked it and then I disliked it. And so The first part, I really liked the starting character. It was easy to understand how to play the knight. And like, I got pretty far. I thought I beat the game because I beat the first boss. It was the first boss. And then I had to do this again in Act 2. And it was like, oh, I should have played for a longer game strategy wise. So that was part of my difficulty of like, do I want to accumulate cards? Do I not? Do I want to make a deck?
It depends on what kind of deck you're building.
So again, first run, didn't really think about those. Yeah. Sorts of things.
Like, so for me, it took me several runs before I started realizing maybe I shouldn't grab a card just because I can grab a card. Like sometimes the cards you get after as a reward don't really fit in your deck. Mm-hmm. But I was like, you know what? Any card is better than no card. But sometimes, like if you get a machine going, you don't really want those extra cards to drag you down.
I had the opposite revelation because the first time around, I was like, I don't want cards. I want to keep a little tight machine. But sometimes you need really powerful cards because also if you don't know what all the cards are, I'm like rejecting them. And then suddenly I'm like, I have 20 cards and I'm like, I should have a lot more and a lot more options because the enemies get different.
Yeah. Yeah.
And there's different mechanics and all sorts of stuff. And so I enjoyed the first run of it and I was like, okay, this is cool. Let me try the new character that I've unlocked plays a lot different. The cards are not the same.
Yep.
And I didn't have like a heal 6 at the end of every battle and I immediately died after a while.
Have you played with all three characters?
Yes.
Okay. So if you're not familiar with Slay the Spire, I don't even know if I went into it in super detail. I think I purposely kept it kind of vague because you were like interested off the premise.
Yeah.
So there's three characters. There's the Ironclad, the
Silent or
the Silent. The Silent and the
Defect.
The Defect. I knew it was ended. I was going to say Construct. I knew it ended in CT.
Yeah.
But they're divided up basically. The Ironclad is your typical warrior class. Mm-hmm. The Silent is kind of the typical rogue thief type class. And then the Defect is kind of the mage class.
Plays very different.
Yeah. And all three play very differently. Like the Ironclad has a lot of abilities that focus on like building block. And, like, using health to attack and kind of, like, barbarian-esque sort of, like, very strength-focused, just, like, beat an enemy with, like, a 40 damage card, that sort of thing. Silent has a lot of thief stuff, like drawing a bunch of extra cards for your turn, discarding poison to damage, a lot of damage over time sort of thing. And then Defect, which is my personal favorite.
My least favorite.
Yeah, I figured you were probably Silent. Do you like the Silent?
So, I originally liked the first guy. So, this was that first mountain. I played the Defect once and was like, this is shit. I don't understand it. It's so weird and awkward. I don't understand this mechanic. I'm just going to stick with playing the first guy because I don't really like this game now. Because I was like, these two characters are too different. They're too different and the game was too new at the time.
Got it.
And so I started just playing with the first guy a lot more.
I mean, that makes sense. That's a good way to like establish a baseline.
Once I started to play with the first guy, though, I was like, okay, now I started to see what items are in the world, like how this stuff sort of works and the respawns and such. So I was like, let me play the second character, the Silent, again, now knowing that I won't have the advantage of health refills. I have to play a lot more defensive. Once I started to do that, there is some interesting stuff you can do with the Silent.
Yeah.
I started to realize there's a lot more defense. I have to be more mindful. I can't just be all like, I'm just going to do massive damage and like tank my way through and just hope for a heal.
Yeah, like that. But I mean, that's kind of the strategy with the Ironclad is massive damage and you can take damage because you recover some of it. While the Silent, you have less health. You don't get that automatic recovery, but you have a lot of like setting yourself up for future turns. Like you can give yourself extra energy in the next turn. So you can do way more with like a lot of little pokes as opposed to big ones.
And then you can, and then by that point I started to realize there's like combinations that you could do, or I didn't like creating big machines. I create like mini machines of like 3-4 cards that if they run together will do well. And I just have to make sure, like I like focusing on basically I run like blue decks. I want to have the ability to run through cards quickly or to have a lot of ways to like get to the card I need.
Gotcha.
So
yeah, when I play as Silent, I really like some sort of combination of infinite blades with like shivs, because mm-hmm. shivs are things that do like 3 damage, but they don't cost you any energy to use.
Yeah.
And so I think at one point I had a machine that like somehow I ended up generating like 6 shivs in my hand a turn in addition to all the other stuff that I could do. Mm-hmm. So I was doing like 20 damage just off base without having to worry about what was in my hand. Like it so I like stuff like that over poison, which uh-huh. is another way you can play it. But sometimes based on what cards you get, it's just better to play poison. Then the defect is my favorite. So he has, or it has, I don't actually know if it's yeah. gendered, these orbs that are basically rotate around it, and your cards are based around either adding more orb slots or like using the orbs, because the way it works is you start out with 3 orb slots, and there's zap, frost,
dark. I haven't seen
and there's a 4th one you can get called plasma, and zap, frost, and dark are all damage ones, while plasma adds energy.
Frost is a defensive.
Oh, one. Defensive. Yeah. Right. Sorry. So zap is offensive. Frost is defensive. Dark is offensive, but in a different way.
It accumulates. It's not yeah. a quick and easy little pokey. Yeah. It's a big blast.
And like as you get a new orb, like they all rotate one over. And the trick is like when they rotate out, they use their ability.
Yeah.
And like they also each one that you have out also uses its ability at the end of your turn. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of planning of like, all right, do I need Frost up because I think he's going to attack this next turn? So I need to cycle out my zaps so I can have Frost available.
And I hated that planning. So the first time I played the defect exactly maybe 2 or 3 times. Vastly, vastly different. The first time I played it, hated this mechanic and like realizing that I have to keep track of all this stuff. Didn't play it again until I'd gotten like used to the other two, how to create machines and stuff. I feel like the Ironclad is the easiest to create a machine around.
Yeah.
Then I came back to the defect with a completely different strategy, knowing that I hate keeping track of the orbs, and I picked a single one to go with.
Okay. So I mean, that also works.
Yeah. Like, I went with, I prefer doing a frost defect where it's like all defensive.
Yeah. And I mean, that's fine.
And it happens to be like it runs on what cards you get. And I ended up getting to like super far, like into the 3rd level, despite this being my 2nd or 3rd run with the defect. Because what I did to avoid all of this stuff, I made my dex damage based on my discard pile.
Yeah, I mean, that's and something
it was
you
like,
can do.
Oh, there's a certain card that there was 3 cards I really like. There was one that was like a genetic card where every time you play it, it just adds like 2 defense, and then the next time you'll add 2 more. So it'll become a 4. Then it becomes a 6 over the game. Mm-hmm. And so playing just fast or over and over and over, suddenly I had a card where if I dropped it down, I could create like 20 armor on myself.
Mm-hmm.
And this solved my heal problem with just massive defense. And then there was another card where it's like based on how much cards you have in your draw pile, you do that much damage. So then it became a give me all the cards you want. All the cards I want though are just discards and things that'll create cards for me. And that's when I discovered colorless cards.
Yeah,
because I was creating machines without the colorless cards.
Mm-hmm.
Colorless cards really changed the game. That's when I became, that was the second mountain of where I'm like, this game actually has a lot of potential and is really, really cool.
Yeah. Like each one plays very differently. And mm-hmm. once you realize that you have to like tweak your strategy based on A, the character you're playing, and B, the cards you get with that character, it becomes a lot more fun. And like for me, I immediately defaulted to the defect as the one that I played the most
mm-hmm.
because in like 90% of games, I hate playing the warrior class. Like mm-hmm. I find the warrior to be the most boring type of class to play. Like I like having some sort of strategy to how I do things. I hate playing a barbarian. I hate playing mm-hmm. fighter. I want to like be thinking about stuff or do cool shit or like these random combos. And yeah, Yeah.
Like, see, for me, it was pure luck of like where I was like, I don't know if I like this game or not. And it came down to I upgraded a specific card and it changed how I felt about the game, which was for the Warrior. It was the upgrade card where you play it one time and it upgrades a single card in your deck.
But if you upgrade it, it upgrades everything.
Yes. And I didn't realize that I didn't even think about it. I was like, I wonder what would happen if I upgraded it, because I never looked at upgrading that card. It was always, oh, I want to do more damage with the others. And so what happens if I upgrade and upgrade? All my cards upgrade, and then with that I became much more receptive to the idea of, oh, I can create really powerful machines with this. I like having options with the Barbarian.
Yeah.
That's why it became the easiest, but yet I could understand what this game is now trying to do.
Yeah, and so it is very reliant on you liking and understanding deck building mechanics.
Yes.
Like, and if you're not a fan of that, you're not going to be a fan of this game. But if it clicks for you, like it seems like it did, mm-hmm. building those machines are fun. And I specifically like Slay of the Spire because I hate multiplayer deck building, because whenever I play deck building board games in like a casual sense with my friends, well, it's not that I can't keep track of what other people are doing. It's that everyone creates their machine and then like there's no interaction. Mm-hmm. Like you don't really mess with other players when you're doing deck building games. And a solo deck building game is great because I like making the engines. I just hated the fact that like I would sit there and do nothing for 10 minutes because each person was doing their long ass engine. And then it would get to my turn and I'd do my long ass engine and then I'd just wait for another 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. You know, 10 minutes is an exaggeration, although not always. But yeah.
And it actually has like because it doesn't reset every battle, except for if you do the Barbarians upgrade one, but like I had to create a machine for the game basically. And mm-hmm. as I'm adding cards, I have to think, will this help my machine or will it not? Which is why I really enjoyed that last defect run where it was the machine became the most hilarious thing, which is I need cards to just bloat my deck. Bloat, bloat, bloat. No strategy to it, and that, except for like create these cards. And then I got cards where it was innate cards, which are you start off with them. Yeah. And it became so much fun to like my innate is like an opening attack or it's an opening upgrade or something cool.
Yeah. There was some upgrade or like event or something when I was playing a silent run that like lets you choose a card in your deck to become innate or uh-huh. something like that, and I ended up getting like 3 innate cards, but they were like of my choice. Mm-hmm. So I just had this like always had this like awesome starting hand that could let me set up very easily, and I think that was one of the ones that I think I've beaten the game with each character at this point. I've beaten the game, but I haven't gotten the true ending with any character. So I'm going to say that and leave that with you because I know you don't want me to like spoil things. Because
that was the hook as well, where I was like, this is cool, but again, Children of Morta, beautiful narrative game. And then there came a moment I was playing as the rogue and I got an artifact and it gave me a piece of lore. And I was mm-hmm. like, why is there lore in a run like... Because what I was doing the first time I played with the Barbarian, I avoided question mark rooms.
Uh-huh.
Because I was like, I don't want to take a random chance. I'll just fight weak enemies, power my way through.
Oh, I love question mark rooms.
Now, I love question mark rooms. They're so much fun because that's where you get the weird shit.
Yep.
And like putting cards. And I was like, oh, as a Barbarian, constantly playing Barbarian, I put a card in the next game. I could get this card in a mystery room. Then I was playing as a rogue and I got the Barbarian card. And I was like, this changes things like crazy. I put an upgrade in there. And now suddenly the rogue can upgrade shit. Like... It was so much, that's when it became fun, was the crossover, as well as there's this secret story that seems to be occurring.
Yeah.
Like, now that's where I needed that narrative hook, because otherwise...
There is a bit of a narrative hook.
It's
not a strong one, but it's there. And
yeah.
Once you beat the game the first time, I think you'll understand a little more of what I'm saying versus true endings.
The bosses are so friggin' hard as well. Like, seeing which ones.
So the bosses are great. Like, I think it's... The first boss is obviously... I think they're designed specifically to fuck with one specific type of mechanic. It's either the first Act 1 boss or the Act 2 bosses. That each one is specifically designed to fuck over a kind of deck you can build. So, like, if you get... paired up against the boss that fucks you over, you're just done. It's very interesting. I like that game. So I think that's where we're going to wrap it up. I think I could talk about some other stuff, but I'm not going to, because we're kind of at our time. We'll put, I don't know if I've even put Slay the Spire as my game of the week yet, but if it's not, I'm gonna go ahead and say that, because talking about it has made me want to play it again. Like, it's such a good game for just like, I want to play something different for like an hour. And like, if just like one setting where I'm like, I'm watching something on TV, I don't want to get into anything narrative based or like a strong story. I just kind of want to pick something up and play for a little bit. It is great for that. It's one of my favorites. Like that and Into the Breach, I think now, are my two go-to games where it's just like, I want to fuck around for 30 minutes.
And it's also great to play for like 12 hours straight.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you can also do that. That's the other thing, is it also has that one more run.
Yeah, just one more.
Just one more. This one I'm going to beat. This one I'll
now fit. I know how to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, so that's it. Thanks for listening. Where can they find you, Harvey Z?
At the Z is silent on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at T-Man Plays Games. You can find our podcast at Make Me a Podcast. You can find my writings at tmanwrites.com. And you can always email us at makemeagamerpodcast@gmail.com. Next week, tune in. It's going to be our manatees. I mean, I guess it is the manatees for both of us this year, because you've got some games. You've played some games.
Now I have to pick which is the best one.
That is true. And I will have mine ready as well. And I'll probably also do like a last year I posted the manatees and then did a companion piece like the day after. Probably won't be until the end of the month that before the companion piece gets up, because I'll just probably edit the podcast and get that out for sure. But I'll also have like a companion write up on the T-Man Writes site. And okay, that's it. Harvey Z, take us out.
I don't want to beat a dead horse. It was too easy. So we all know where the horse is.
Is it a T-horse?
Yes, it's a T-horse. It is a T-horse.
Of T-course, it's a T-horse?
All right. You don't own letter T.
I T-can?
Are you a Mexican?
No, we're not. No. We're not going into horrible movie podcast.
That was a great movie.
That's Desperado, right?
Or it's second one. Once Upon a Time in Mexico.
No, that's the third one.
That's the one, though, that has it, because it's
the Johnny Depp one, right?
The Johnny Depp one. Yeah, it's the Johnny Depp
one. Johnny Depp one is the third one. Oh, God. Why? That one was a... Oh, why'd you make me remember that movie? God damn it.
Because the first one and the second one were the same movie.
Yeah, that is fair.